Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey Podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Trade deadline day, dude. Here we are, it has come and gone. The Sharks made a pretty shocking trade. I guess I was going to say a big trade. You call it a big trade maybe with the number of players that are involved, but I know just based from our reaction, when I told you over the phone, there was almost no reaction in your voice. You were in shock, you know, and I think that everybody on Twitter was as well. I think everyone knows we're talking about the trade that sends Jamie McGinn and two Sharks prospects, Michael Scarbosa and Mike Connolly, to Colorado in exchange for TJ Gagliardi, Daniel Winnick, and the coveted seventh round draft pick that Doug Wilson loves so much. I think we've got about.
Did you say Jamie McGinn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Jamie McGinn. That's what has us weepy over here in San Jose, dude. You know, we were big fans of Jamie McGinn's style of play this year. And let's just jump right into it, dude. What do you think?
Well, dude, first of all, I do want to set up the story, because when you told me what the trade was, we didn't know what the Sharks were giving up. So I wasn't necessarily reacting to the emergence or entrance of TJ Gagliardi and Daniel Winnick. It was more like, uh-oh, what are we sending the other way here? Because it's two NHL players, right? You think two NHL players, then you're sending at least one NHL player, maybe two. If you're doing a two-for-one kind of deal, that means you're sending a pretty good player the other way. So I was certainly... I know some people were saying, like, you know, could it be like Joe Pavelski or something? No. But Ryan Clough did cross my mind. It did occur to me that it could have been Ryan Clough for those two guys and the pick. So that was making me nervous until we did find out it was the three players you just mentioned. So I know you tweeted, I think this Twitter thing is going to take off anytime.
Okay.
I think this could happen.
Yeah, you think?
there was about 1,000,000,000 tweets that we both put out and received. So that was a lot of fun, talking to people on Twitter. I know we were driving up to San Francisco on Saturday, and we tweeted an idea about trading Niemi and Clough, and a pick? Or and somebody else for Nash?
Yeah, I don't remember. And we got a lot of feedback on that.
So that was a lot of fun. We got some emails this week. We're going to get to all of that. But first of all, as you said, dude, we do need to break down this trade. So I know you said in the in a tweet this afternoon that one of us is for this trade or has a good reaction to this trade, and one of us doesn't. So the question is now, which one of us is the good cop and which one of us is the bad cop? And for answers to that, I think, didn't someone email us with a guess on which it was? It might have been Aaron. No, Eric, sorry. No, it wasn't. Maybe it was another tweet. But anyway, let's reveal, dude. Are you the good cop or the bad cop on this one?
Well, I'm the good cop, I guess, because I think I don't like that we gave up Jamie McGinn. I like Jamie McGinn. But something had to happen, because this team was treading, they were the fat kid treading water in the deep end of the pool, and they were getting tired and they were sinking, dude.
Yeah.
They were sinking. Yeah. It was going poorly. And, you know, the return that we got two legitimate NHL players who one is a defensive specialist.
Right.
And, you know, was second on the Avs in PK time. Very strong defensive forward in Winnick. And a guy in Gagliardi who's 23. I mean, both these players, 26 and 23.
Right.
These are young players. Gagliardi, 23. I remember him in that playoff series 2 years ago. He was a pain in the ass.
He was good.
He was fast. And seemed to be his peak,
right.
Unfortunately. So he struggled. For a guy in McGinn who plays with a lot of energy, has been chipping in goals, hits a lot, but played 7 total minutes on the PK for the entire year.
Right. Which means he probably just got a few seconds here and there at the end of the PK.
Or... And everyone's getting upset about Scarbosa. He's having a great year in junior.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Mark Smith scored 100 points in junior too.
120.
All right. So we ranked him pretty high on our prospect list at the beginning of the year. He was not even ranked by Hockey Futures in the top 20.
No.
For the Sharks. And I mean, we're talking about McGinn, who basically was out of favor last year with the team, and 2 undrafted players.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm excited about the 7th round pick.
Are you now?
Okay, so that's kind of my take on this. Something needed to happen. The team needed to be shaken up, dude. So that's my take on it with some perspective. What's yours?
Okay, so let me put the glasses half empty spin on this, and then I'll talk about sort of my evolution over the course of the day after doing some more research. My initial reaction after listening to this is the Sharks gave up the best player and they gave up the best prospect in this deal. That usually does not a good trade make.
Right.
I have to say I definitely disagree with Mr. Plank on Fear of the Fin. He said that TJ Gagliardi is the best player in this deal. I don't agree. I think Jamie McGinn right now is a better player than TJ Gagliardi. Agreed, TJ Gagliardi had 40 points a couple years ago, but he hasn't been able to reproduce that performance. So if we traded for Brad Boyes, would we be happy because we got a 40 goal scorer? It just happened to be in 2008. No, we would not be getting a 40 goal scorer in Brad Boyes. We'd be getting an 18 goal scorer, maybe, on a good year for Brad Boyes. So we can't say TJ Gagliardi is a 40 point 15 goal scorer because he's not. He did that one time. It's not the same thing. So that was my initial reaction. Best player, best prospect going the other way. How is this a good deal for the Sharks? Well, then I started looking at the one player that no one seems to be thinking about or talking about very much, and that's Daniel Winnick. And Daniel Winnick has some excellent stats, actually. Of all the Avalanche players that played more than 30 games last year, Daniel Winnick has the best Corsi relative of any player on the Avalanche.
Explain what that is one more time.
So Corsi is sort of like a plus-minus stat that takes into account missed shots and blocked shots as well as taken shots. So it's sort of like, it's basically a way of saying how many offensive chances are you producing versus how many offensive chances are you giving up. So positive number, obviously good. That means you're on the ice for more offensive type shots rather than shots against. And that's also compared to all the other players on the team. So Daniel Winnick had the best Corsi relative of any Avalanche player last year. He also had some great defensive numbers. I know before I was converted to the Church of Corsi, I looked a lot at even strength goals against per 60 minutes and things like that. He had very stellar numbers when he was in Phoenix in those numbers. Daniel Winnick actually might be the best player in this deal. It's possible.
Right now, he is.
It's possible that he's actually the best player in the trade, and he might be the third player that most people mention. So Daniel Winnick is, by pretty much all accounts and by history, an excellent penalty killer, certainly a better penalty killer than we can say Michael Hanzus is. I would have personally been more excited if we got Daniel Winnick in the offseason than if we got Michael Hanzus. So let's think about it in those terms, because that's, I think, what we're talking about. So if we put that spin on it, I am no longer quite so negative as I was a few hours ago.
Okay. I think it hurts, and it still is surprising that a guy like McGinn is gone. A player who obviously was a fan favorite this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we were all talking about, here he comes, finally coming out of his shell. This guy's found a role. He's found an identity. And that's great. You know, obviously, this was a sell-high situation with McGinn.
Right.
Was his value ever going to be any higher than this? We don't know.
Hard to know.
But right now, you were able to basically cash in 2 NHL players for 1 in the current moment.
Right.
Avalanche not playing for right now. Sharks' window of opportunity to win cup, maybe another this season and next season. So, you know, Winnick is an unrestricted free agent. I think we know how this goes with the Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very surprising to see him not be retained. Now, this guy's making under $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give him a raise, he's going to stay. Like, that's the plan. Him and Gagliardi are dating, I think. They're good friends.
Yeah.
From all reports.
Right. They're going to go to Chick-fil-A or something for lunch.
There's some funny videos of them actually through Avalanche TV.
Oh, really?
There's this really funny video of Gagliardi going shopping to the grocery store.
Uh-huh.
And I guess he put on 20 pounds one off season and he was eating 9 meals a day. So they followed him to the grocery store. It was pretty funny. Like, and Daniel Winnick, they did an interview with him, and these guys seem like they have personality.
Mm-hmm.
And like they'll fit in with kind of our eclectic group of oddballs that right. seems to be in the Sharks dressing room. Gagliardi also appears to do several interviews without a shirt, which already
definitely fit in.
Made me laugh. So, dude, I look at the Sharks roster now, and I'm sad to see McGinn go. But I'm hopeful that this is going to inject some energy, because from what I've read about both these guys, they have motors, you know. Mm-hmm. You go online, you see Gagliardi can blow people up, and so can Winnick. I mean, Gagliardi put Fistrick right through the penalty box door a couple weeks ago.
Right.
You know? Winnick has fought Klo twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking for guys to add grit and defensive hockey sense to this team that is lacking that. You got two guys who are willing to do that.
Right.
So
this may turn out for the best.
It might. Something had to give here. And you know what? If the Sharks players are upset about this, then they need to all take a good hard look in the mirror. And if they had gone 7-2 on this road trip, this would not have happened.
Right.
It wouldn't have happened.
I don't think so.
They laid a turd.
Right.
It's their fault, and now their buddy's gone. Okay?
Right. I don't even want to talk about the Nashville game, because was that the worst game of the road trip? The fact that they came up by 2,
no.
They gave up the lead, they gained the lead, and then they coughed it up again in the last 10 minutes of the third.
No, I don't think that was worse than the Minnesota game. The Minnesota game was disgusting. It was disgusting. They came out and looked amazing in the first like 4 minutes. They're
right.
dominating. You know, Joe is shooting the puck, and you know, they were all over Minnesota, and then all went in the toilet after that. You know, they're taking penalties.
Right.
They took a ton of penalties. They just, you know, it was classic road loss for the Sharks on this trip. They completely melted down and blew it against a team that, let's be honest, they suck now. I mean,
right.
Minnesota, they're not good.
Right.
They're not a good team. The Nashville one, I felt bad for Greiss because, I'm sorry, no. It was the Minnesota one where Greiss, like every goal was like tipped or...
Right.
You know, it was like...
It's like Jed Ortmeier is like suddenly Tomas Holmstrom there tipping goals in.
And then I think we all thought McClellan had a coronary
right.
in the middle of the game because... And you really couldn't blame him. You know, maybe
right.
you should stop eating that ham sandwich on the
oh
bench.
My
but
God.
Tomahawk chopped by Scandella in the head.
Eh.
Evidently, McClellan's going to be behind the bench tomorrow night. But... that didn't look good at all.
No.
I mean, he
didn't know what happened there at first.
When he stood up, I mean...
looked a little woozy.
He looked pretty woozy.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
just
pretty lousy.
But you're right. I think this wouldn't have happened if it weren't for this terrible road trip. There's only so many times you can hear Joe Thornton and company say this is unacceptable before you start just completely disregarding it. I mean, it was disgusting and dispiriting and all of those diss words. It was terrible. These last couple of losses, it was terrible. I can't even think of another word right now to describe it because, I mean, it was disgraceful, actually. Maybe that's the best word. It was disgraceful. I mean, this is a team that should be beating the crap out of bad teams, has beaten the crap out of these teams before, and then just completely lays down like a dog against Minnesota and lays down like a dog against Nashville.
Yeah. Is it McGinn's fault? No.
No.
You know, he plays hard every night.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing McGinn is good defensively. His Corsi number on the team is one of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's minus 12. You know, and, you know, Gagliardi and Winnick are both better than that.
Right.
Better defensive players. So... You roll the dice. I think we're going to see a completely new third line when Dominic Moore is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be Winnick and Gagliardi and Dominic Moore.
Yeah.
And here they come. You
right.
know, 3 defensive-minded players.
Hey, new guys. Go
and
get it.
That's what's going to happen. And, you know, the other person you got to point the finger at right now is Michael Hontzius. Dude,
yeah.
you know, you've blown it. Like,
yeah.
this is... I think...
like, the third line center role was handed to you on a frigging silver platter. Like, there was nobody else to take it, and you managed to play yourself out, and the Sharks have now traded for three players to try and replace you. That's essentially what's happened.
Right. I mean, he's moved down to the fourth line, and right. The other thing I like about this deal, dude, is now you've got Mitchell, Hanzus, Desjardins, Winchester, who I think is the lock to have a spot on the fourth line. So then you've got Desjardins, Wingles, who's now playing, he's on fire.
Yeah.
You know? And that hurt McGinn too. Wingles' coming out party over these last 2 weeks, I think, made McGinn expendable, because Wingles sure looks a lot like Jamie McGinn when he's playing the way he's playing. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Maybe he doesn't hit quite as hard, but he's doing all the
neither
things.
Neither did McGinn at first.
Right. So, you know, Doug Wilson might be seeing, going, you know, this seems like a duplicate part a little bit. We might be able to get it out. So you've got these guys, they're going to be competing for two spots. So you know what? If you're playing well, you're playing. If you're not, you're out. And there's going to be guys sitting in the press box who were taking normal shifts 2 weeks ago. They're going to be out.
Yep. I think you're right.
So, dude, I mean, we're not going to know until we see how they fit in. And allegedly, they'll both be here tomorrow. They seem like they're both excited. It sounded like after the Kyle Quincy trade, everyone's excited to get the hell out of Colorado. So in that respect, I feel a little bad for Jamie McGinn. But they do have a good young core there with, you know, Landeskog. And, you know, getting Steve Downey is a pretty shrewd move.
Yeah, I thought that was a good move, actually.
You know, the
Kyle
thing
Kyle Quincy has not been very exciting in most of the places he's been.
No.
So I mean, I like Steve Downey. The fact, if he can screw his head on straight, that guy could be a very effective player.
Yeah, if you can, you turn Quincy into Steve Downey, that's a pretty good move.
That's a win.
So I guess Colorado, you could say, came out looking pretty good, not quite making up for that awful Varlamov trade, but but they came out looking pretty good in all this. Is there anything else you want to say about the Sharks trade, dude? I'm trying to see of my notes here. You know, we've been talking a lot about the good. Let me tell you a little bit about the bad. All right. Winnick has not scored a goal in 2 months, you know, so that's not good news. Gagliardi, the knock on him is that, you know, he doesn't really know if he's a scorer or a grit player, and Joe Sacco had enough. So, didn't seem like Adrian Dater, the beat writer of the Colorado Avalanche, was super bummed about Gagliardi leaving.
No, I don't think
he
so.
He seemed not thrilled about Winnick leaving, but it seemed like he was going to help Gagliardi pack. So, sounded like you can get a little bit of that. But, you know, sometimes guys need a change of scenery. You can see how well it worked out for Devin Sotoguchi. Shall we talk about some of the other?
Let me talk about Eric's email. We actually addressed most of the points. Eric's made a lot of the same points. He said he can't help but think Tommy Wingles' ride led in part to this trade.
Absolutely.
He talks about some more trades, and he's happy that we kept Demers, and he's one of the biggest Colin White haters around. So I understand that. He said it sounds like Wilson was in on some more aggressive moves, like Niemi on the trade block. Niemi for JVR would have been inspired and incredibly risky. To me, that seems no way.
There's no way. So Philly's looking to add another starting goalie? Just that there's no way that was the deal.
That was in the cards, yeah.
But we did talk about that. And we floated that. I think in order to make the move for Nash work with the Blue Jackets, it had to involve Niemi because of the money.
Right.
I mean, it had to involve Niemi because of the money. I think they offer, I mean, this is just pure speculation, no proof.
Right. No evidence.
They asked for Couture. We offered Pavelski. Like, I think we offered Pavelski, Niemi, and something, and evidently it wasn't enough. According to Darren Drager, TSN, the Rangers made a huge offer, I guess, at the end, and Columbus still didn't take it. So whatever that was, Rick Nash is still in Columbus. But it wouldn't shock me to see him in teal over the summer.
Yeah, I think it's very likely he'll be traded after the season's over at this point. Now I heard that not only did he okay a trade and give a list, he actually asked for a trade.
Sure, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes.
Get me out of here.
Very much
please
so.
Please get me out of here.
So it's possible. I absolutely 100% agree with Doug Wilson's reaction to the request for Couture, which is not only no, but hell no.
Hells no.
Hell no.
Absolutely not.
Untouchable. No. Untouchable. Yeah. And he's not even in the deal. And as I think Fear the Finn and others may have said, Pavelski actually may have better numbers than Rick Nash this year. So, you know, the fact that they didn't take Pavelski, if we in fact did offer Pavelski, of course, with which we have no proof, that may not have been a great deal in the Sharks' favor either.
Right.
You know, the fact that nothing really big happened in terms of Rick Nash to me might be a blessing. This might be another opportunity for Doug Wilson to pick somebody's pocket, especially when you, by all reports, had not only the Rangers but the Leafs involved, and we've seen Brian Burke go after players very aggressively, so he probably offered a pretty good package, I can imagine. So Doug Wilson going up and winning a bidding war isn't his style, so it doesn't surprise me that much that that didn't happen. The only thing Eric says at the end, he says, no Gostad, no apology. First rounder seems steep, no. So those who didn't see Paul Gostad and a third or fourth?
Yeah, fourth.
Ended to up, Nashville right. for a first round pick. That's quite a bit for Paul Gostad. 6 weeks of Paul Gostad, keep in mind. This is a guy that's not signed. You know, I don't know. Nashville certainly doesn't have the history that maybe the Sharks do of trading for guys and signing them to long-term deals, but this certainly seems to be a subtext to the Shea Weber and Suter sweepstakes, which is, oh, guess what? We're actually trying to win something now. We're going to go get Hal Gill. We're going to go get Paul Gostad. And we're going to go get the other Kasitsyn brother, Andre Kasitsyn, and actually try to win something here. So for Nashville, it makes sense for them. I'm glad the Sharks didn't give up a first-round pick.
Yeah, that's a big price to pay.
And I understand that we wouldn't want to match that. And our keep in mind, it's pretty unlikely that our first-round pick would be seen by the Sabres as a better offer than the Nashville first-round pick.
Well, right now it would be. I mean, right now the pick would be, but you got to believe at the end. I mean, if I was a betting man in Vegas, I'd put money on the Sharks to last longer than the Preds. But you know, the Predators are very aggressive. You got to give them credit. And if I'm going to give someone a winner tag at the deadline, I'm gonna give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm impressed by their aggressiveness, and you know, it's wide open. You may as well go for it with that goaltending, great defense. If they can get enough scoring and shut people down, you know, that's going to be a pretty difficult, even more difficult to play against team with those three players in the mix, dude.
I watched the EJ Raddick little video, and it was him and one of the agents that we follow on Twitter, and he's, I think that was his number one winner for the day, is the Nashville Predators. But he also said the Sharks too.
EJ?
He mentioned the Sharks. Yeah.
Good.
He said the Sharks, you know, gained some defensive depth, and they've obviously been in a slump, and that might help them pull it out. So dude, let's run down some of the other trades here, 'cause I'm really trying to avoid talking about the road trip. Sort of the big head scratcher of the day, or the first trade that I think sort of set things off, was Nick Schultz for Tom Gilbert straight up. And that's Minnesota to Edmonton. Tom Gilbert coming back to Minnesota. And I know that the beat writer from Minnesota certainly said that, you know, the locker room in Minnesota was shocked and stunned to see Nick Schultz go. And I think someone tweeted that, you know, this is exactly what Minnesota, the kind of player that Minnesota should keep. So that didn't seem like to be a great you know, management maneuver by Cliff Letcher in terms of keeping you know, his players informed and his locker room informed,
right?
Because they all found out via Twitter. So Tom Gilbert's coming the other way back, so clearly Edmonton's looking for more defense, and with the loss of Marek Zdlicki going to the Devils, the Wild are looking to replace a puck mover, and Tom Gilbert's pretty good.
Yeah,
I saw that trade, I said it's obvious that Tom Gilbert's a better player, but maybe I'm not so sure. It seemed to me like he's a better player.
Yeah, it's surprising to me because it seemed like Minnesota's whole style is that familiar Minnesota Wild style of shutdown. And what they did and blocking shots and all that, and they traded two of the best shot blockers in the NHL in Schultz and Zanin today,
mm-hmm.
and they acquire a kid from Boston in Kampfer who has, you know, 48 games of NHL experience. And I mean, he might be a good player, but he's a kid. And they acquire Tom Gilbert, who I think is probably the best player of all the ones we're talking about. But this doesn't totally fit. I don't know. I mean, like, I guess it makes sense. I don't understand why Edmonton did that.
Right.
They need a puck mover, and they traded their puck mover.
Right.
I mean, you can't count on Ryan Whitney for anything, and Cam Barker is god-awful. And so now you've got Schultz and Andy Sutton, like, lumbering around. Like, I don't know. Schultz's not that bad.
No, he's not that bad at all.
Schultz is a good player, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to disrupt a young team like that by trading such a popular guy when things are already bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know. A lot of players, it seems like, did not find out about the trades prior than to them being listed on Twitter. So you heard a lot of that today.
Right. I know. Note to all the GMs listening to the podcast, and we know that you're listening. Have a plan to inform the players that you're trading.
Right.
Basically, the second that trade goes through, because it's going to hit Twitter. Someone's going to find out and someone's going to post it. And it looks like a terrible move on your part if you haven't figured that out yet. Guess what? Earth to GMs. There's something called the internet. And, you know, the idea where you can go and have a cup of coffee and get a donut and then, you know, work out and then call the player and tell him he's been traded. Those days are gone. You have to tell him within minutes, if not seconds, of the trade being finalized that this is actually going down. Call them before the trade call even happens, just, you know, to try and be actually honorable about the whole thing. Letting the guy know via Twitter is pretty bush league.
Sammy Paulson to the Canucks for 2 fourth rounders.
Right. And not to mention the other trade that Vancouver made, which is they traded Cody Hodgson and Alexander Seltzer for Zach Cashin.
I don't like that deal for Vancouver.
You don't?
I don't. Zach Kassian hasn't done anything. I mean, he can't even stick in the NHL on a bad team. I mean, they keep sending him back and forth between Buffalo. I've watched some Buffalo games on Game Center. Like, he seems like a physical player,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, right now, I mean, you can't tell if he's going to be Ryan Clough or if he's going to be Brad Winchester. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't know. And you traded like a can't miss kind of slam dunk second line center in Hodgson, and your return is a guy who's played like 30 NHL games and Zach Kassian. I don't know.
Well, they're trying to get tough. That's pretty obvious from these deals. I mean, they got Paulson to get tough. I mean, he's not tough as in like fighting tough, but he's tough as in he'll play PK all day.
They were in on Steve Ott. I'm so glad they didn't get him. But like,
right. I mean, this is what they're trying to do.
But so like Dallas wasn't going to take Hodgson for Steve Ott? I find that hard to believe.
Right.
So they pick, I mean, I don't know.
They pick Cashin over Ott? Yeah, that seems unlikely.
It does.
Maybe they weren't offering Cody Hodgson. I don't know.
Maybe, but that doesn't seem like a straight up fair deal to me. I think Buffalo.
I haven't seen enough Cashin to be sure.
Me either. About that guy. Me either. But I have seen some Cody Hodgson. He's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffalo, I think, did well. You know, I think they did pretty well.
So Vancouver's clearly trying to counter the Brad Marchand factor, I think. And Boston just quietly goes out and gets two pretty good players for essentially nothing. I mean, the two guys they gave back to the island, they got Brian Ralston and Mike Motto. Brian Ralston was once an awesome player. I mean, he could be this year's... I mean, maybe they're just trying to do the wrecking ball thing again. You know, they're trying to go get Bill Guerin or Mark Recchi or something in Brian Ralston. I mean, Brian Ralston once scored like 40 goals or more, right? And Mike Motto is a pretty good defenseman. And I was complimentary of the Islanders when they got him. And they bring back Yannick Riendo and Mark Canton, two guys I've literally never heard of before.
Yeah, I'm looking them up here on Hockey's Future.
I think I Googled Yannick Riendo and Google actually replied and they said, who? that's what Google said. So that was a little strange. You don't usually see that every day.
Yeah, no. I mean, in the deal I'm looking at for Greg Zanin, that Buffalo did add Greg Zanin too, which is probably even... I like Greg Zanin. He's a good shot-blocking defenseman. I mean, mm-hmm. he's a good, you know, number 4, number 5 defenseman, plays on the PK. I think definitely, you know, you think about it, Boston got better too.
Yeah, Boston did good.
Add some depth. And I don't see any of these guys here in their top prospects. So, I mean, they did pretty well to keep all of their top guys while addressing some needs, dude. What are we forgetting?
Matt Gilroy gets traded again. So clearly Matt Gilroy has got, got a bad taste on him.
Yeah,
clearly.
Well, I mean.
It's like that Seinfeld episode where Elaine is like the difficult patient. I think Matt Gilroy has something in his file.
Yeah, he's turned out to be a disappointing player, you know, for a guy who won the Hobie Baker.
Right.
That's the funniest. One made me laugh out loud.
John Scott for a fifth rounder. the thing is, that was funny because you were happy. They were amazed that they could get a fifth round.
I couldn't believe Boston, Chicago comes out smelling like a rose.
And Chicago goes out and gets Johnny Aduya. So.
Yeah, that's a good pickup for them.
That's a good pick for
them.
Know,
Aduya is solid. He's certainly a better player than Steve Monitor.
And better than John Scott without saying.
You know, if you throw Aduya on their third pairing, I mean, they definitely got better in terms of that. We have not podcasted since the LA Kings landed Jeff Carter, dude.
That's right. Okay.
For Jack Johnson, what's your take on that trade for both teams?
Scares me a little bit from our perspective because Jeff Carter is obviously a pretty good offensive player. He's had injury problems throughout his career, and he's also signed until the end of time. So I remember reading a Facebook thread or something, and someone's like, man, I was really hoping the Sharks could get Jeff Carter. And my reaction to that was, what? Really? but that being said, I'm glad the Sharks aren't, tied to that long-term deal, which I believe ends literally in like 2020 or something. LA's big problem was offense. They could not score to save their lives. And getting Jeff Carter will definitely help, especially reuniting him with Mike Richards. Simone Gagné is still hurt. No big surprise there. But, you know, those three guys once all played together in Philly. So it's certainly possible that there's going to be some pretty ready-made chemistry for Jeff Carter once he gets to town. And that scares me. So Jack Johnson's one of those guys, actually not completely unlike Eric Johnson, in that he was supposed to be so great and it's just sort of never really happened.
Right.
Yeah, Columbus taking a flyer on it, and they may end up looking like geniuses because he does mature into the player a lot of people thought he could be, but he still is not anywhere close to being the player people think he could be. So that could end up being a major bust for Columbus.
Given the situation that they were in,
mm-hmm.
I think they did well to get Jack Johnson back. You know, Jeff Carter was doing anything and everything he could to get the hell out of there.
He was practically burning like the coach as an effigy.
And for them to get a good NHL player with really high upside and Jack Johnson back, I think is a win. And, you know, I guess if you look at, you know, they ended up trading Voracek, and didn't Johnson come with something else too? Wasn't there some other part
first,
of the trade?
I think, wasn't it?
Hold on.
Might have been a first.
I don't see it, dude.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Do you see it?
No, I don't see it here.
No. Where is it? It's got to be there.
It's
scroll up.
Dude,
damn it.
Oh, well, yeah. You're right. It has to
scroll
be
scroll up, dude. Scroll
sorry.
Up.
Sorry, dude. It's here,
oh,
I swear.
Oh, gosh.
This is really good podcasting by us.
Dude, it's up further.
Is it really?
It is. There it is.
Yeah.
Jack Johnson and a first. So
conditional.
So that's a good deal. You know, mm-hmm. so they got Jack Johnson and a first for Voracek, a first and a third or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, you know, that's not as bad. It could have been a lot worse. So, dude, I mean, the Sharks right now are in seventh place. They've completely plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a dogfight. And they're only, I think, a point away from falling out of the playoffs completely. You know, actually, I'm sorry, 3 points. And that's with LA chasing you. And Colorado, who you've got to think is going to be a little, you know, energized.
Where's Phoenix at?
Now Colorado's 1-3. Phoenix is the 3. Phoenix won 5 in a row.
That's right. And Phoenix is good. I like the trade they made for Antoine Vermette, which we also haven't talked about. So they managed to get rid of Curtis McElhinney, who is basically with nothing.
Yeah.
And they gave up a second and a fifth round pick for Antoine Vermette, Hello. Thank you.
It's a problem right now. And you got to hope that the Sharks can figure it out and figure it out fast.
Right. And they don't have a lot of time.
No, they don't have a lot of time. And the schedule is certainly not doing them any favors, dude.
No. We're looking at Philly tomorrow night. Buffalo better be a win. Obviously, this weekend against
St. Louis,
we can't even assume that the Sharks are even going to be in this game. And then hopefully we can beat the Oilers next week. And then there's the Stars in Phoenix, and you know it doesn't get any easier. You know, late in March we got the Ducks, the Kings, the Bruins, and the Yotes in a row, and Detroit on the front end. Oh, and Nashville before that. So you know we got a string of like 6 or 7, 8, 9 games where none of the teams are out of it, none of the teams are in major trouble. I mean, this is not exactly the best time of the year for the Sharks to be trying to pull it out.
Well, we've seen this trick from them before. And, you know, as frustrated as we might be, dude, I feel like in 5 weeks, we'll be sitting here talking about the Sharks who've won another Pacific Division title. You know, I think that they seem to have their attention grabbed at the right time during the regular season. And we're all just waiting for them to turn it on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Winnick and Gagliardi is going to spur that on. And I think they should be irritated, and I think they should be hurt. And what an awkward situation to have your flight delayed, and then they're in the air today while McGinn is traded while he's on the plane with the guys. Like, that must have been really, really...
And he, like, tries to get on the bus to go back to San Jose, and they're like, no, sorry, you can't get on the bus. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, my car's at the arena, and they're like, no. They're like, here's $10, you can call a cab.
That did not happen.
No, it didn't. But I can imagine that it might happen. I hope it wouldn't happen.
I'm sure that was a very awkward flight.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you've got Logan Couture, who just had the tar beat out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And his good friend now is gone. I mean, he's got to be feeling real good right now. But I hope that these two guys can energize the boys. And, you know, Philly hasn't been... on a roll either.
No,
you know, they've been struggling, but it's going to be a good test for them. You know, Philly, if anything, is always up for a fight. So,
right. That's true.
You got to hope the Sharks can get up for it and turn it around, dude. And they can only get better. It can't get much worse than this, right?
That's true. If they lose to Philly, man, that's pretty bad.
The health situation, let's recap that really quick before, you know, Murray was skating today. Havlat was skating. You know, it seems like Havlat
is still a ways out.
They seem like he'll be back for the playoffs. So that's several weeks away. The one that you haven't heard much about is Dominic Moore.
Mm-hmm. And Couture, we don't really know the status of.
Yeah, Couture, it seems like he's game time decision tomorrow.
Okay.
But for Dominic Moore, that's the player I want to know about. And no one seems to really talking about it.
Which isn't a good sign.
Lower body injury. I mean, you wonder if his health may have also prompted them to go after two players here that kind of fit that role. So let's hope Moore doesn't have a serious injury. I'd like to see that new third line that we've concocted. Now, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to see them playing together, hopefully, as soon as tomorrow night.
This is a tense time for Sharks, man. Tense time for us, tense time for the fans, tense time for the team. Clearly, you know, the gauntlet has been thrown by Doug Wilson, as in, you know, I will make changes. I mean, I traded a guy who's having the best year of his career, and I just shipped him because I'm not happy with the way this team's playing.
Yeah.
So
it's a statement.
That means nobody's safe, right?
No.
Nobody.
But shouldn't they know that already? You would think. I mean, every year when there's something wrong with the team or they don't meet expectations, he makes a big change.
Mm-hmm.
He's added Dan Boyle. This summer was probably the biggest changes that he's made. You know, Seto, Heatley, gone. You know, Havlat and Burns in. So... Lots of new guys. Hanzusin. It's time to stop making excuses, and it's time to get some results, dude. And let's have it start tomorrow night. Fire it up.
Amen. Go Sharks.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.